This is your captain speaking. It's time to take flight with Jada Davis. I'd like to welcome everyone on board. Get ready to navigate the journey of launching your next big idea. This flight is intended for the aspiring or thriving business owner, the person with a really good idea but not sure where to begin, and that person working on a job dreaming of the day that you can work for yourself. We are currently at a cruising altitude. The seatbelt light is turned off, and it's time for you to execute. What's up, what's up, what's up, everybody? This is Take Flight with Jada Davis, where I have me and my business besties. We come together, we talk about navigating the journey of launching your next big idea. So I have to bring a heavy hitter. You will hear more about him. You've heard about him if you've read my book, because I talk about the journey of entrepreneurship, and he was absolutely instrumental in that. And so I want to welcome everybody, Kelvin Woods, or K Woods, as I call him. Welcome.
I appreciate it. Yes, sir. K Woods. And so that's kind of a college phase, high school, college phase. So yeah, that's what's up. I'm excited to be on here. I know we talk a lot about entrepreneurship. We have these conversations, and, you know, just with technology and media now, we're able to record these conversations and let people actually be, quote unquote, fly on the wall. So this is dope. I appreciate you letting me come on.
No, I appreciate you, you know, and you all will be able to see. I also am tapping into the Equity Tap, which is K Woods. This is his podcast. And so we're going to talk a lot about that. But before we get into the business, I want to have a little fun. You know, we are taking flight, and I like to think of it from, with me being based in DC, you in DC with me, we're going cross country. So we got a little time. And so we're in business class. I've ordered my drink. So I'm typically drinking whiskey or something, some brown liquor, something like that. You know, they're serving us first because we're in business class. So what's your drink of choice?
I'm going to have to go with the classic old fashioned Gentleman Jack if they got it.
My guy. Yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. That's what's up. So if money was no object, you could fly out today, what's the dream destination? Where are you going?
Wow. That's interesting, because if money wasn't an option, you know, we'll just go to all the destinations. But right now I'm feeling big city. We've gone through this phase, and I talk to my wife about this all the time, and we're planning summer trips, and it's always the beach. It's always the beach. And the beach is cool, but you know, it kind of goes in waves. So at this particular time in my life, I want to go somewhere that's big city, maybe a Paris or something like that. Mm. Yeah. So
I like that. Yeah. I think for me, it would probably be, I am a beach girl. But okay. I'm going to London later in the year, but I like Paris. It's a lot to see. I've seen a lot of people that we know go recently, and you know, they making it look real, real appealing. So I probably you there. Love it. So when I think about, you know, just life in general and growing up, I know we have had phases in our different career journeys and what we wanted to do from where we are now. So what did you want to be when you were growing up early on?
You know, it's growing up in the African-American community, it's always sports. But, you know, it takes a little bit of realization or time to realize that maybe you don't necessarily have the talent to play at that level. But as a kid, you know, that's our dream. I grew up playing football, running track, and fell in love with baseball. So I would love to have a professional baseball career. But again, I didn't get the necessary development. My talent was decent, but my talent is one that really needed some development. And because I didn't get it at the foundation of starting to play, because of the resources weren't there, that wasn't necessarily a career that I was going to be able to pursue. But I would have loved to pursue an athletic career for sure.
Wow. Okay. Fun fact. I like that. Okay. So thinking about just we're in business class, we chilling next to you. Your seat is empty. Somebody comes to sit down. You can pick anybody, dead or alive. Who you sitting next to, and what are some questions you'd ask them?
Man. This is a great question. You know, naturally people would think we would say business, right? And you got all the business people that you would want to sit by, and that's all cool. But honestly, if I'm picking who I'm sitting beside, I'm picking the Honorable Louis Farrakhan.
I love that answer.
Yeah. I'm infatuated with history. I'm one who grew up as a Christian. you know, in a religious house. And as of late, I've really enjoyed going to see how other people practice religion and, you know, just the things that they believe, because I believe that success principles are universal, right? So I've really just kind of fell in love with the information and the way they present it. So I've been kind of captivated by that here lately. So I would love to just kind of ask some questions about history and how some of these things came together. But yeah, that's what I'm sitting by.
Oh, I love that. I love that answer. Now, to your point of just learning more, I think our generation, we really tapping into like how other people learn and how other people, like you said, with religion and practice, and just we are so curious for more, much more than, you know, the generations before us. And so I can only imagine what those after us are going to do. So I think you are like a lot of people really just trying to learn more. And especially if you love history, you know, just really trying to bring everything together. Mm-hmm. No, I like that.
With history, the more you know about, you know, the past, it helps you understand where you are today and then how to maneuver. So a lot of those questions in our communities just don't get asked or answered because of the education system don't necessarily align with our culture. So we get immersed in different cultures and things like that. And a lot of times our history starts here in America, but who were we before that, right? And those are the things that I'm kind of infatuated with now, because I think if you can realize who you were in the past, man, our perspective and the things that we can accomplish today was just, you know, the sky's the limit. So
absolutely. Yeah. It's literally like taking it back and knowing your journey, your story is so important. Yeah. That's so important. So yeah, that's great segue. So, you know, Kelvin is a serial entrepreneur, business coach, and the owner and creator of the Equity Tap Network podcast, all things. And so I want you to tell your story. Take me through your journey to entrepreneurship. How'd you get here?
Yeah, absolutely. So most people don't know my background is more on the creative side. So being from Memphis, you're familiar with Overton High School. I went to Overton. I wasn't supposed to go to Overton, but Overton had a program called Kappa to where you can audition and you can get in under the creative and performance art is what it stood for. And my talent was art. So I went to Overton and I studied painting, drawing and things like that. So as I got ready to go to college, I was thinking graphic design. But an interesting thing happened my freshman year. I don't know if you remember this, but I decided I wanted to start a magazine, and it was called Boss College Magazine. If you would have walked into my dorm, do you remember that?
Yes. Wow.
So me and a friend, we started Boss College Magazine, and that was literally my collision with entrepreneurship, because prior to that, it was all about just creativity. But when I started that magazine and we went out and we solicited ads and we started organizing, and it was fun. So I just fell in love with the whole process of entrepreneurship and business. And then I got introduced to network marketing, which was really a blessing in disguise. I didn't make much money from network marketing, I'll be the first one to tell you. But the education was equivalent to a Harvard business degree to me, because it taught me networking, it taught me prospecting, it taught me, you know, confidence, all these things that we didn't get taught, you know, in our culture or get exposed to going to conferences, you know, hearing multimillionaires and their journeys and things like that. So I kind of put art on the shelf and kind of immersed myself into this intense mental, you know, development, reading, studying, traveling. I left school my sophomore year to pursue entrepreneurship. So while a lot of people still having fun, I was cutting my teeth in entrepreneurial space. So fast forward, got married early, 22, then started a screen printing company at 24 in my two-car garage. Didn't know anything about screen printing. My previous career was working for FedEx Kinko. So I learned a little bit about print production and how to kind of run the infrastructure of a print company. But as far as t-shirts, I didn't know anything about it. So made a ton of mistakes, ran that company for about a decade. And I got acquired, sold that company about 2 years ago. Well, not quite 2 years ago, about a year and a half now. Yeah. Love so that's kind of crash course in my background.
Yeah, man. I already knew this was going to be an amazing conversation, but my mind is literally exploding. I want to ask you so many things at the same time. So, but let me take it step by step. So
for sure.
First off, you know, I always forget until you tell your story. I always forget that we didn't meet in college. Like for the longest time, my mind always went there, but we actually met way before college. We met in high school through a mutual friend. Shout out to Justin. and have remained connected since. And so I've loved seeing your journey. And like, you know, those that have read my book, if you've heard the audiobook version, it's a best-selling book on Amazon. I speak about Kelvin and his influence in my journey of one of my first businesses, which was Grind Match, my apparel line and my motivational apparel line. And, you know, Kelvin would, I hit him up. I knew I was going to do a pre-order. I hit him up like, hey, how quickly can you give me these 20 shirts? And he would ship it to Dallas for me. My warehouse and fulfillment center was my one bedroom apartment in Dallas. And you were just so instrumental in my career and the things that I was doing. So I always think of you, always speak of you. And so shout out to you for sure. I just want to give you your flowers, man.
Nah, I appreciate that. And vice versa. You were, you know, one of our foundational customers when we were really getting started. And you exposed us to a level of business that we weren't necessarily tapped into with the show that you was working for and the celebrities that kind of came with it. It just really broadened our horizon. It's like, yo, and it helped me realize, too, that the connections are important because we went to school together. And prior to you working for them, I would have never had an opportunity to be able to connect with that audience. So just seeing you transition, working for that company, and then bringing us on, it helped build our belief in what was possible as well. So we appreciate you.
No, yeah. I appreciate it. You mentioned network marketing, which I think I don't even think about enough because that also was such a huge part of my experience with business and learning. Like you said, just the whole prospecting customer, I mean, that alone, that lane alone is so huge. When I was in network marketing, one of the services that I was providing that I was offering to customers was text marketing. And I always talk about this because text marketing is such a huge part of every day now. SMS, all the things, people got a link to their email. Like it's a whole thing, right? But I was selling this like 10, 12 years ago and people thought I was crazy. And so I was so in front of the curve, you know, I still have, there's a rapper, shout out to Tyke T in Memphis. He was my first text marketing customer and is still using it today to promote his, he promotes his brand. He connects with his listeners and his fans. And I'm like, he would ask me one day, he was like, are you still getting paid for that? I'm like, I'm not, but I wish I was. Like when I just look back, I'm like, look what would have happened if I would have stuck with it. Right. So for me, it was a personal lesson. Sticking and staying and stuff. So you brought up a good point. I think a lot of people have had experience with network marketing, and even if they didn't make money, there was a lot that we were able to take and pull from that. And so I've been able to kind of do the same. So that takes me to, you know, really just thinking about your influences. So you went into entrepreneurship very early, but did anyone influence you? Did you have anybody in your family, a personal friend? Like, how did you even think to get into entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think entrepreneur. Well, I realized that I wasn't one for the academic route. High school was cool. I more so enjoyed sports and art. And so as I transitioned to college, like I said, I went through this real crash course of just kind of learning how to learn because I didn't learn how to do that in some of the foundational years of education. So as I started learning how to learn, I started reading entrepreneurship books, of course, real estate books and things like that. And it just expanded my mind to the whole, you know, potential of entrepreneurship. And I realized, too, one of the things that network marketing did was it really kind of brainwashes you to really be independent. And the corporate career just was not appealing anymore because you see the lifestyle of some of these other people. So as I kind of immersed myself in that, the combination of reading and things like that, entrepreneurship started becoming a real thing to me. Now, I did have grandparents who ran a dump trucking company for a few years. And it was later on after he retired from his traditional career. And then in retirement, he started a dump trucking company. And I saw them do well. They expanded from one truck to five trucks. But I also saw, you know, lack of, you know, business infrastructure, taxes and things like that eventually wiped the company out. And so a lot of my cousins, my brothers and things like that, that was one of the things that we had in the back of our mind that eventually we were going to be able to take over. And so when that kind of, you know, went away early high school, that seed kind of went away. But then, like I said, as I started the magazine company, entrepreneurship came back to the top. And that's kind of when I immersed myself in it. So combination, no, not really. I didn't have a lot of people in my past that I saw that ran successful companies. But when I transitioned to college, it seemed like that's all the people that I was around was entrepreneurs. So
yeah, that's what's up. I think about, you know, when you talk about just your, where you got your entrepreneurial spirit and where that comes from and things like that. I also want to go back to something you said as far as selling your screen printing company. A lot of Black business owners, we jump into entrepreneurship with the desires and goals, the why of freedom and to do our own thing, to have something that's our own, but very seldom, especially small businesses, let me speak to that, are not thinking about business to grow, scale, and sell. And so can you speak about just the, how did you get to the place where it was even an option, you decided to do it? Because, you know, most of us die with our businesses. Most of us are in businesses where if we stop working in the business will end. So I'd love to dig deeper on growing a business that you can, you know, grow, scale, and sell. Yeah,
absolutely. So I think, you know, you want to have that sexy answer. Like, yeah, we started the company with the idea of selling it. And when we hit this certain number, we knew it was time to sell. And, you know, that's what I'm doing now, you know, because I understand the process. But to be truthful, with the screen printing company, the foundation was always, how do I build systems so that I can free myself up? And I got exposed to a book early on, which was The E-Myth. I'm pretty sure you've read it. And this thing was like the Bible to me. I went to Home Depot and I literally bought whiteboards and covered my whole bonus space. It was just a think tank. And I would read this book and I would write stuff down. Then I would think back on previous careers that I had an opportunity to participate in, like FedEx. And I started thinking through, man, well, the book made it make sense, the systems that they had. And then I started understanding this whole process. So at the foundation of the t-shirt company, it was always systems. Now, did I want to sell it? No, not necessarily, but it was built to sell. And so as I started growing the company, scaling the company, we started implementing a lot of systems that allowed me to free myself up, which allowed me to go out and get bigger books of business. And then, you know, COVID hit. And then we were just really asking ourselves, because one of the challenges that we have in business is the first big one is we don't necessarily have a lot of the capital, right? So we bootstrapped it. And one of the most difficult parts of the business is getting the plane off the ground. And that's where all the energy is. If you think about an airplane, we're traveling right now in this conversation, right? We're in first class. So if you think about this current airplane that we're on now, but seriously, if you think about it, all of the energy is exerted on the takeoff and getting that plane in the air. So from 24, when I started the company, to the time that I sold the company, really all of my energy had been, you know, exerted by getting this business to a certain point. And at that point, it gets easier, but I was out of energy. So when I thought about the next wave of growth that I would have to do for this business, I started thinking about the capital. I started thinking about the level of education. How am I to bring my whole organization on board with this? And I was just mentally tired. And so I knew that the numbers were great. We were going into COVID. So we started entertaining, what does it look like to actually put the business on the market? And we consulted a business company that sells businesses and stuff like that. A business broker, we consulted or talked to a business broker, and they gave us a number, and we looked at the number and we was like, okay, wow, this is cool. And you know, once you get that number, now you start dreaming. You start, okay, man, what would life really look like if we could actually sell? So it took us 9 months from the time that we put the business on the market to the time that we accepted the offer that we eventually went with. And we had quite a few offers in between there. But one of the things that I learned about selling a business in this process is there's so many factors contractually that we don't necessarily know that you have to learn and you have to think through. Like, a lot of businesses sell with the contingent on how well the business does after the owner leaves, and some of your payouts and things like that. The business doesn't do good, then you sold the company, but because it didn't perform, you don't get those initial bonuses or those extra payouts and all that good stuff. And what I'm referring to is what they call EBITDA. And you can look that up. I'm not to go too deep into all of that. But so we had a lot of deals like that. We had a lot of deals that was contingent on me staying on longer than I initially wanted. So that's why it took us 9 months, because we was vetting through different deals and the perfect deal came. We accepted it. So that's kind of a
congratulations.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's huge. And so I want to ask you a little bit more about this, you know, this part of your journey of if there's someone listening and they are They're like, I don't know if I would want to sell yet. I don't even know what that looks like. But what are a few things I should just be prepared for? What are a few things I should know that I must have regardless of what broker and how they purchase my business? What would you tell them? Just give them a nugget.
So from my perspective, and of course, there's way other more perspectives that, you know, can contribute to this conversation. But based on the things that I saw, the biggest factors of getting acquired is the foundation, which is systems. Let me back up. So you got to think about who's buying the business first, right? You have some people that want to buy the business because they want to be the owner operator. So a lot of the systems aren't necessarily as important because they're going to come in, they're going to operate the business. The things that's important to them is, do they have a book of business that when I invest in this company, that I'm going to get a return? Well, in my case, the individuals that bought my company, they didn't necessarily want to be owner operators. They was looking at it from an investment standpoint. So they wanted to make sure that staff was in place, the book of business was in place, and the systems are in place. The accounting, all that good stuff is, of course, going to always be, you know, some of the most important things that you got to consider. But you think about those two individuals and you just ask yourself, you know, who are you selling to? And each one of them are going to require different things, but accounting systems, you know, and things like that are always going to be the most important.
Yeah, I love that. So while we're talking about, you know, the success you've had, I love to know, and I think all business owners have a story. It may not be a business story. It could be a personal story or journey that impacted the way you do business. But I want to know from you, what's your struggle story behind the success?
I mean, wow. you know, we all have struggle stories and they will all sound the same. You know, it's a thing that's, you know, you struggle, you know, you persevere, you stay consistent, and then you persist. But it all looks different for me. One of the things that I did, man, because I was so heavy in network marketing when I transitioned to starting this company, I realized how powerful your mind is. And sometimes you don't necessarily have the answers, but you can build off of some of the things that you do know. And one of the things that I did know was, if you don't have any retreat, then you got to go forward. So I intentionally burned a lot of bridges in my process of pursuing my business. Some of the bridges, I mean, when I put my 2-week notice in my company, they was like, look, put your 2 weeks in and we'll code you as a rehire. And I was just like, you know, I appreciate it, but unfortunately, today is my last day. Because I knew if I would have put it in, I would have went back eventually. And there was times in my business trying to get it off the ground. I hated that I didn't put the 2-week notice in, right? Because I wanted to go back. So the foundations that I started my company off of was, all right, let's burn bridges so that there is no avenue for retreat. And so in doing that, a lot of struggle came with it financially. My first year in business, I made $8,000. Right. As a 24-year-old man, that's horrible. That's not a lot of money. So we lived off a lot of savings. My wife still had a income from her job and things like that. So we kind of made it all work. But then you come around to my second year, we found out that we were expecting. And so now was that real realization of, all right, what are you going to do? You're going to make this work, or, you know, you're going to go back and try to get into corporate America. And so I decided to buckle down and make it work. And so I had to really get out of my comfort zone. I had to network for the first time, go into these, you know, these rooms and give my elevator pitch and figure out how to work that whole process and, you know, invite people to lunch and to have these conversations and to, you know, do all of these things. So my second year in business, after doing that, I literally would go through 10,000 business cards every month because I'm just out. I'm going to lunch. I'm going to breakfast. I'm going to after hour networking, whatever I can do. I'm putting my cards out there and I'm inviting people to lunch. I'm following up. But after my second year in business, I netted $60,000. I was 25 years old, most money I'd ever made. At that time, I was probably making more money than most of my friends that I went to college with, because they weren't necessarily in their careers at that time. So that's when the realization hit me. It's like, all right, we got something. And so I transitioned from Nashville, because I was in my garage in Nashville at the time. And how we got to Nashville was my wife took a position to be a branch manager of a technology company. So we left Chattanooga, where we were going to school at, moved to Nashville so that she can take that position. And then after 2 years of running my business and making 60 grand, we then decided to move back to Memphis. And so I took on a small property in a historic community, Orange Mound. And that was So that's another story, but it was important that we put the business back in Orange Mountain. That's the community I grew up in. It's the community I'm from. We could have put the company anywhere. I had enough cash at that point where I could have went out to different parts of the city that probably would have been accepting of the business a whole lot more. But, you know, God just gave me the vision and said, go to Orange Mound and hire people that look like you within the community. So that's what we did. We was in Orange Mound for, you know, 5 years in a small 2,000 square foot building. Didn't have a lot of the amenities. It was hot. We questioned on a daily while we were still in the community. But the truth of the matter is, we were, in my opinion, what I would like to say, we were a light. You know, we will hope that you can be successful and you can come back into your community, hire people that look like you, and run a thriving business. Within a year or 2 years of coming back, we were doing $500,000 in that location. Yeah, if you drove past that building, you would have never in a million years said that we would run $500,000 of revenue through that, just because of the condition in which it was in. And so, so it was important that we did that. And then eventually it did started costing me money. We started going back because I couldn't retain talent because of the conditions, and stuff started happening in the community that, you know, weren't favorable. So we then moved to, you know, a larger facility that was initially 6,000 square feet. Then we expanded to 8, and then eventually expanded to over 10,000 square feet. And the magic started happening at that point. So that's kind of my struggle victory story in the t-shirt industry.
No, and shout out to Orange Mound. So I am who I am because of Orange Mound. My mother, all of my maternal side of my family was born and raised in Orange Mound. And anybody that knows my mother, Nidra Reddit, she's good to be walking around at a business conference with an Orange Mound, Tennessee shirt on. She has been loud and proud about it. So for those that don't know about the history of Orange Mound, it was the first community to be built for and by Black people. And so there is a lot of history in Memphis, but specifically in Orange Mound and the plantation in which it was built on. So definitely, if y'all are into history, you want to dig deep and do some things there. So shout out to you. And I love that. One of the things that I always remembered about you and those of you that went to Overton High School, a lot of the guys, you all are still very connected today. And so for a person like me that really values the beautiful part of building and maintaining relationships, I love if you can kind of talk about that. Like, how has that been just instrumental in your life of just really building and maintaining relationships?
Yeah, I think everything goes through phases, right? And you have to realize what phase you're in. I think at a foundational or beginning part of my career as a young man, as an entrepreneur, as a husband, as a father, because I didn't necessarily grow up with a father in the house, I had to rely on a lot of my friends that had connections with either their fathers or had more experience in these areas to be able to kind of develop myself as a holistic person. And so, you know, we just had a good bond that allowed us to do that. And I think now as you kind of transition and everybody starts to have family and life starts to look different in careers, you know, you always hold on to those relationships. You may not be in communication as much as you used to be, but it's just a growing and development process. So yeah, I'm real big on loyalty, right? So I come from Orange Mound. And once you come from an urban community, loyalty is, you know, the foundation of everything, because truly, we don't have enough resources. We don't have all of these things. So the one thing that we do have is our word. So if I can't help you financially, Jada, one of the things I can say is, look, if you ever need to talk and you need to call, I'll pick up the phone. That's my loyalty. That's my commitment to you. So growing up in Orange Mound, growing up in the urban community, loyalty was big. So I've always valued, you know, loyal friendship, and I've always valued being a loyal friend. So, you know, that's one of the things that's been able to help a lot of relationships that I've been in stay together, because in a lot of cases, I'm willing to do a whole lot more in that relationship, you know what I'm saying, to make sure that people succeed. Because one of the principles that I've always realized is, if you help enough people achieve what they want to achieve, and this is from network marketing, you know, if you help enough people achieve what they want to achieve, you will always be taken care of. So I've always valued connecting people, you know, to other people, and watching doors open and just sitting back and, you know, like, man, I'm glad that I was able to help, you know, do that. And because of that, 10 more doors opened up for me. So that's kind of how I've always looked at relationships.
Yeah, that's good. So let's talk Equity Tap. So first off, I love the name, love the design of the logo. I told you that, man. Look, you got me, my wheel spinning. I'm like, love the hoodie. I'm like, I love it. Love the marketing of that. And yeah, I do. You're welcome. So tell me, like, how did you come up with the name and what's the vision for the Equity Tap?
Yeah, so before I jump into that, you know, I think that's an interesting perspective because a lot of people, like I said, I dive so heavy into entrepreneurship. A lot of people forget that I actually have the art, the creativity, you know, side of me. And if you look at any brand that I've ever built, right, it's always led with the creativity from the Mound Collection, which was an organization where we sold Orange Mound merchandise and then utilized it to go in and buy properties in the community. You look at the art company that I was able to build through Black Artists. You know, all of these things are centered around art. You look at the t-shirt company I built. If you walked into my showroom, you know, we were doing things that a lot of people weren't doing because it was all inspired by, you know, creativity and art. So the Equity Tap is no different, right? It's an interesting story. It kind of came about in network marketing. You know, one of the biggest things we do is we go to conferences, we meet, we travel. That's a part of it. So last summer, my partners was like, yo, we're going to go to this conference in Atlanta, Earn Your Leisure, Invest Fest. So I'm like, cool. You know, I wasn't necessarily excited about the conference. I was like, all right, we're going to go kick it, fellas trip. You know, there's a couple of things I needed to tie up in Atlanta business-wise. So I was like, it's a good opportunity. I'm just going to go and hang out. And walked into the conference and saw 15,000 people. And started listening. It's like, yo, 15,000 people is in this room because of a podcast. And I wasn't necessarily as tuned in with it as I am now. And so I started researching and started studying and started realizing the power of podcasting. And so the Equity Tap was kind of born out of that. And so when I started thinking about the Equity Tap, I said, okay, what do I want to bring to the table? What conversations are we having? And you go through this whole process and you start looking at what other people are doing and it spits out this product. And when I was looking at it, I wasn't necessarily happy with it. I was like, you know what? Nah, it has to be a little bit more real. It has to be a little bit more natural. And so the thought just hit me. It was like, we have these conversations all the time. Just let's turn the cameras on and have these conversations in front of our audience and help them tap into the perspectives of successful entrepreneurs. Some of the things that, and so the way I look at it is, what are some of the things that I wanted to know in the foundational years of starting my business? And those are the questions that I ask, you know, my guests and try to expose my audience to, because perspective is the key, right? The more things that you've been exposed to, the more you can have a more well-rounded perspective. And it allows you to make decisions a whole lot faster, wiser decisions, because you got more stuff to pull from. And so my thing is, I believe that people know the one or two things that they need to do to move themselves forward. But why aren't they doing it? And it's mentally, right? It's the mindset. It's something that's holding them back. So I try to tap into the mindset of successful entrepreneurs like yourself and expose my audience to that. So if they're going through similar things, something to click for them and to help them go to the next level. And so that was the foundation of the Equity Tap. And, you know, as we launched the project and we started seeing, you know, the feedback from people and, you know, things like that. And now, you know, our minds are even expanding even more. So now we're looking at it in the standpoint of a network. How can we create Black media? Claude Anderson has a real big influence on the way I think about community. And I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, some of his stuff, but Claude has this idea of a five structured building, right? And he says this building is how our community should be structured, right? On the foundation, it is economics. So we know this, our community goes broke every day at 5 o'clock. Because we don't control the commerce in the community, right? So the gas stations, the corner stores, the mechanics, all of these things, these people don't live in the community. So at 5 o'clock when they shut down, they take the bag of money and they go into their community. Everybody's heard the statistic of how long the dollar circulates within our community, right? Mm-hmm. And they compare it to other ethnicities and things like that. And it's laughable when you get to the Black community and realize that it's less than 6 hours. Like, how does the money not circulate in the community longer than 6 hours? But in the Asian community, it's 21 days. Or in the white community, it's 21 days. In the Asian community, I think it's like 29 days. And so, and when he talks about this building, the foundation being economic, so how do we start realizing, you know, our economic power and start moving our money in our community? So that's the first floor. The second floor is politics. And I'm not going to go through all of it, but second floor is politics. I think the third floor is legislation. And then the fourth floor is media. We need a way to be able to control the narrative. If you think about all the stuff that we watch on TV, a lot of the times it's bought content to where you can't necessarily say what you want to say without getting in trouble or whatever the case may be. So I said, all right, how do we take Black media and deliver it in a way that resonates with the people, you know what I'm saying, that looks like us, that want to move forward, they want to achieve success and things like that. So that's kind of how this whole Equity Tap piece came together, realizing that there's a responsibility for Black media to show up in a way that exposes, because here's the thing too, it's so much information out there, right? And yeah. Now the information isn't the problem. It's how do you take that information and translate it into actually, you know, equity, assets? Mm-hmm. How do you take your, how do you move it around? How do you do these things? So there's a responsibility for us to expose this information. And we have, as African-Americans, the only way we've really been able to do this is through church, right? And churches have not necessarily took on the economic side of the issues that our community deal with. They have necessarily taken on the political sides of the things that our church deals with or our community deals with, right? And we know why. There's certain restrictions that come with, you know, all of that good stuff, not to dive into that. So when I was thinking about Black media, it's like, hey, the things that I complain about people not talking about, that's what we're going to talk about. That's how the was birthed. We started in January. So we just finished up Q1. So we're having some, you know, some great feedback in. And so now we're starting to onboard shows, right? Different shows that talk about different things, that deal with women issues, that deal with men's health or mental health. We're bringing on food shows and exposing food entrepreneurs. And so it's kind of like a Revolt TV, right? Yes. So if I say, man, who's my idol in building all this? This is who I'm looking at. But I'm doing it through the lens of Memphis, right? Through our culture, through the things that we like, because there's a need for it. So in a small way, we're trying to help fill that gap.
Yeah, I love it. Thinking of Revolt TV.
Education, just so people.
Right. Thinking of Revolt TV, my shirt I have on says Diddy wasn't built in a day. I designed this shirt. Whatever year he did the Bad Boy reunion tour, which is absolutely the best show I've ever been to. And so I've always been influenced by Diddy and the way that he thinks and the way that his just mind goes. So I went to that first Revolt conference that was in Miami. I went to the first one that was actually a rant. Like, I talk about this part in my book because Diddy put that conference together very last minute, but because of who he is, it didn't seem like it was last minute. I used my influence and my access to like get media coverage and stuff. And in the time when I was still working for the Tom Joyner Morning Show, no one else there was like going to events. I'm like, y'all not using y'all access? I'm like, that's network marketing told me to use connections, all the things, right? So I submitted the application. They approved it so last minute. But again, going into connecting with people, relationships, I literally connected with my homegirl, Cassidy. I connected with Chastity J, Miami, dope editor, hashtag edit bay. She's a brilliant creative in Memphis. And I've seen this girl since high school. However, I saw her one time before, hit her up, and I was like, listen, I got credentials for this conference. I can't even stay the whole time, so I'm going to give you my credentials when I finish. I just need somewhere to stay. She was like, come on. Stayed on her couch. And the rest is history, and we've been so connected since then. But that conference was life-changing for me. That conference is where I met Punch, who launched Kendrick Lamar's career at TDE Entertainment. And he's the one that said to me when I was going around, this is before I had shirts from you, before you printed them, I had the ideas of Grind Match and the Shut Up, Keep Grinding brand. And I was telling people about it. And I was like, I was getting people to do the pictures where they was standing around doing this and whatever environment you was grinding in. And Punch was like, but why you ain't got your shirt on though? Yeah. He was like, I love what you're talking about, but why aren't you wearing it? And I was like, wow, literally. And that's why every day since y'all have seen me rocking my apparel, if I have nothing else to own, it's gonna be something I created. And so that was a life-changing experience for me. So I love that you went to the Earn Your Leisure conference. I heard a lot of great things about it. I definitely did. So I know that obviously we see the fruit, we see what is the results of you attending that. So I love that for you, for real.
We still at the foundation. So it's startup life, and it's so interesting because, you know, I ran the t-shirt company for a decade. So startup life was the farthest thing from, you know, where I was at in my career. So to sell the company and sit still for a whole year and a half, and then jump back into a project, mentally, I'm jumping back in where I left off with my last company. But the realization is, you know, I don't have the team members. Now we have a couple team members now, but I don't have the team members. I don't necessarily have the whole infrastructure, system. So now I'm trying to get the plane off the ground while figuring out all of these systems, and, you know, there's cost and all these things. So it's a fun time to be, you know, 36 and back in startup life, but, you know, utilizing resources from the previous business to be able to do it at a level in which I know that it needs to be done. And so it's all a balance, and it's all a faith walk. You know, you don't know what's going to come out of it, but I do know the steps in which has to be taken, right? There's some non-negotiables when it comes to being successful, and you got to pay the price. You know, you can't negotiate with it. You got to pay it. So that's what I'm doing every day. I'm paying the price. I'm getting up early. I'm putting in the hours and reading, you know, I'm putting myself in the rooms where the conversations are happening. I'm networking. So I'm doing all this stuff again. And the biggest thing, honestly, where I'm finding the most lifeline from is tapping into the young generation. I got maybe four or five guys, man, that's under 22, between 18 and 22, that, you know what I'm saying, we talking on a daily. And the way they think about stuff and their perspective and, you know, all of this stuff is, you know, shaping the way that I do a lot of stuff, because I can vividly remember being that person that said, bro, if you want to know what millennials want, just ask. Right. And the older generation would never ask. So now, you know, saying a lot of us, the millennials, who, of course, now are the biggest population in the workforce, you know, we got a realization that there's a generation coming behind us, and you don't know what they want. Right. You don't know what they like. So I'm finding a lot of my lifeline by tapping into them and, you know, creating a space to where they can kind of come together and network and meet and stuff like that. But I'm a fly on the wall. I'm just listening. I'm asking questions. Why you do that? Why does that make sense? Why y'all dress like that? You know what I'm saying? Like some of the weird stuff and just understanding their culture. So yeah, man, it's interesting.
I love that. I've been having so many conversations about really tapping into the younger generation, like, consistently. So all this does is just really affirm what I've already been thinking, what people have already been saying to me and planting seeds in. So you just another person. I'm like, all right, I hear you. It's time to do that. You mentioned something when you're talking about non-negotiables. So that leads me to a question I always want to know. It's like, what are some of your non-negotiable, like, business boundaries, like not doing it?
I think, you know, at the level that I'm at right now, it's different from when I was in the startup phase. Like, one of the things that I've realized is this whole concept of time and money, right? And as a young entrepreneur, I would take on any project, even if the price wasn't right, and I would use up all of my time because I'm trying to get going. But what I realized is, you put yourself in a position today by taking on some of these projects that don't necessarily pan out or are, you know, not necessarily as profitable, you're tying up valuable resources, which is your time. And I can't remember who I heard say this, but they were saying that most successful people are successful because of the things that they're able to say no to, right? And not the things that they say yes to. And so at this phase in my life and in this phase in my career, I'm learning how to say no to a lot of, you know, opportunities. And it's tough, I'm not gonna lie, because at my core, I'm a person of service, right? So I wanna see you succeed, I wanna help out, I wanna chip in. So once you come to me with an idea and asking for my help, my natural response is, let's do it. But at this phase, it's just like, I gotta say no, I can't. So that's one of my non-negotiables right now. Like, know what your goal is. I know what my goal is. I'm trying to achieve. I know what I'm trying to accomplish. So now the only variable is, how quick can I get there? So if you came to me, Jade, and said, hey, I have an opportunity, the only filter that I'm running it through is the speed, right? So if it's going to allow me to get to my goal quicker, let's partner. But if it's going to take me away, it's going to distract me, if it's going to slow me down, there's nothing against what it is you're trying to do. It's just, that's my non-negotiable right now. I got to stay focused. on what the goal is. Like I said, the only variable is, can you help me get there faster? If we can help each other get there faster, now we can talk partnership. But outside of that, you know, I have to respectfully decline. So that's one of the biggest ones right now.
I love that. That's a filter. And we all need that. We all need some level of filter to really assess what to say, like you said, say yes or no to. So now that's dope.
Yeah.
I love that. So you talk about the systems and processes that you really implemented in the businesses that you have run and operated. So now, as someone that is building a podcast network, a creative network, what are some of the systems and tools that you can share with people that are listening just for your business that we should be aware of?
So in this space, I think with systems in general, I think you got to break them up in categories, right? And so it starts with some of the work that you do with the entrepreneur clients that you work with, right? Looking at the organization as a whole, right? What does the organizational structure look like? And then once you draw that organizational structure out, then you say, okay, what are the functions of each one of these categories? And then once you say, what are the functions of each one of these categories? Now the question is, how can I make this easy? And so what I like to do is, and it's more of a mindset, not necessarily the systems, but this is the mindset that I use to build systems. So I look at it in four categories. The first category is, all right, now that I have all this stuff listed on this board, what do I want to do, right? So I go and circle those things, or I initial beside that. And there may be 10 things out of 50. And so now I got to figure out, how do I get these other 40 things done, right? And so I say, all right, the first one is, how do I use technology, right? Because technology is a big one. AI, you know, virtual assistants, all of these things. So how can I use technology to make the process easier? Then I roll over to, all right, what can I outsource? The accounting, the taxes, things like that. And then last is, you know, who can I hire? Employees are always the last one for me, because I've ran an organization where I rely heavily on employees. And that's a whole nother mindset. That's a whole nother thing that, you know, you got to be prepared for. And at this phase of startup, I knew I didn't want to bring on a lot of employees and get into the whole management game of employees and stuff like that. So when I think about systems now, those are the things that I'm doing. I'm thinking about, one, what do I want to do? Two, what can I bring technology in to do? Three, how can I outsource some of this stuff? And then four, who can I hire to do what's left over? And a lot of times that comes with virtual assistants that you can get at a very affordable price, things like that. But so that's how I look at systems. You draw your org out, look at all the responsibilities of the business, and then think through what you want to do, and then drop the rest of it in these buckets. And then the systems then become easy for you.
Yeah. I think that, you know, everybody, and you have to have a system to run a business. And with that, you know, a lot of people get into entrepreneurship for different reasons. We all have different whys, but at its core, there's a foundation of money, right? And so everyone has a different relationship with money, depending on their experiences, how they were brought up, all the different factors, right? What life events have happened over the course of time. So I love to hear from you. Like, what's your relationship with money? When you think about it,
That's a good question. I think my relationship with money is very, very similar to probably majority of African Americans' relationship with money. Right. We come from a place of lack. That's the foundation. So everything runs through the filter of lack and survival. So growing up, I grew up in a single parent home, and I saw my mom hold down several jobs, kind of, you know, in our younger age to make sure that, you know, things were good. And then she started getting traction, and she started being able to save some money, you know, just through being smart with her resources and stuff like that. But it was never enough, you know, so we always had to make stuff work. So coming from that place, you know, and going, and when I talk about this period in college, when I say I went through this intense mental, you know what I'm saying, transformation, that's where a lot of my ideas on money changed. Because prior to that, you know, my idea was always coming from a place of lack. But getting into, you know, business and entrepreneurship, my relationship with money started evolving, right? I started realizing that you can, if you got a vision for something, right? If it's something that you want to achieve, you can manifest it. But what is the process of manifestation, right? And it typically is, inputs, right? So the input of education, you got to put time into reading. You got to put input into the time of going out, prospecting, meeting people, you know, all of these different journeys that help you create a sale, right? And then once you get that sale, how do you then spend the money? I read another foundational book called Profit First that really helped me, you know, understand how to start allocating funds and stuff like that. And it talked about the different buckets, you know, pay yourself first, and then this is how you structure your account. So, you know, as you go through these, education is the foundation of it all. The more you educate yourself, the wider your perspective is on these things, and it shapes and it molds, you know, your relationship with money, your relationship with everything. So it's ever evolving. It's always growing, but it started from a place of lack. And then it quickly moved to a place of realization that whatever it is that you want to achieve, you can achieve it. But there's some inputs that you have to make in order to manifest the vision that you have, you know what I'm saying, in your mind. So I don't know if that's that answers your question.
No, it does. That's your answer. It's your answer. No, I love it. I mean, because to your point, like we all, that is the foundation for Black people. But once life happens and you have different experiences, it definitely changes and evolves. So I love that. I think a lot of people are going to be able to really relate to that. And so that takes me to you are a father, you are a husband and an entrepreneur. And so as a serial entrepreneur that was raised by serial entrepreneurs, my perspective has been very unique and very different than a lot of my peers. And so I'd imagine that your children will have a very different, they have a very similar experience that I have had. And so I'd love to know, like, how do you want your children to remember you?
That's a question that I haven't put a lot of thought into, right?
Okay.
And I think the reason why is because it's more so like, all right, we're living now, right? Like, so what they remember me by is going to be the memories in which we actually live on a daily basis. So How do you spend quality time? How do you expose? How do you give opportunity? How do you, you know, do all of these things? And I think as a whole, at the end of my life, I would want them to look back and say, all right, he positioned us, you know what I'm saying, or changed the whole trajectory of our family financially, but not only financially, but positioned us spiritually, holistically, you know, to be independent thinkers. And that's a real big one for me, man. I want generations that's coming from my lineage behind me is to always question things, right? Because that was one of the things that really held me back in my entrepreneurial career at the beginning was a lot of beliefs that I had was just not true spiritually, right? You know, about money, work ethic, you know, all of these things mentally, all these things were not true until I started questioning and breaking these things down. It started allowing me to free myself up. So independent thought is the biggest thing for me when I think about like my daughter. I don't like the traditional forms of remember, regurgitate, right? Because are you really learning how to critically think? I like to put her in a position with a Lego set that, you know, she's 90% done with and then break it. Now you can't use the traditional, you know, systems or pamphlets to put it together. Now you got to critically think, all right, how do I got to do this? Now you got to start forming an ideal of how to rebuild. So independent thought, teaching them how to critically think, and then setting them up financially too, is always, you know, the goal. And I think about the grandkids, right? Those are the ones that's going to really benefit. The work that your mom and your dad did, the grandkids are the ones that's going to really, really benefit from it, because we still saw some of their struggle, right? But these kids, they don't see none of this, right? They got the fruits of the labor. So now they can literally stand on two generations of shoulders. And now they're not worried about that because they're not coming from a place of that. So I think that's cool to kind of see my daughter not necessarily come from a place of lack. It's also very, very scary because sometimes they don't realize, no, you can't necessarily, because you can afford something, it don't necessarily mean you need to get it right now.
Yeah.
Like there's some hard work that has to go into this, some goals that have to be set. So yeah, a little bit of all of that.
Yeah. Make them do a PowerPoint presentation like my mama did to get anything. That worked. I had to do a PowerPoint presentation to get anything. Cell phone, go somewhere. I mean, but presentation skills are A1 now. So definitely works. Yeah. Look, take it. That. So part of self-care in in general is doing something for yourself. So what I like to do here on Take Flight is ask at least one question for me. You know, typically the conversation we've been having has been to make sure that it's beneficial to the audience and those that are listening. So I got one question for you. So I am putting you on the spot. This is for me. You're a business coach, so I know you're ready. I have my personal affairs organizer that I created as like a workbook to really kind of be like your blueprint for when, if today's your last day, tomorrow somebody has a resource, they have a guide, they have a roadmap of how to handle your affairs. They know who your advisors are, your banker, your pastor, all these things, as well as where to find assets and manage them. So I'm trying to figure out what I can do next. What ideas do you have of like where I could be marketing to? What audience should I be getting this book in front of? Give me something.
Yeah. So I've been on my whole tangent of podcasting here lately, and you're already doing this, but to just kind of shed some more light on it, if you're not creating content and you a brand and you a company, you're going to quickly find yourself going backwards. And I think a lot of people are at this place now where they realize they got to turn on the camera, right? And they got to get in front of the camera, and people got to actually start associating you with the brand. They got to start seeing this content, and people are terrified. So I think continue to do what you're doing now. Keep putting the camera on, keep putting content out there, because what happens is you become an industry expert. I've been able to pick up so many speaking engagements just because I've turned on the camera now and started talking about the stuff that we talk about all the time. And people are out there that know this information, but the difference between me and them is they don't want to turn on the camera and talk about it. And because you're turning on the camera, you're talking and you're exposing entrepreneurs to this, you become the industry expert. Because here's what I know, because I sit behind the camera and we do these interviews similar, right? I know, Jada, that there's a wealth of knowledge right now that you have, that you know, that sometimes the audience don't necessarily get a chance to see, because you're interviewing other people. It's about me. It's not necessarily about you. But once you turn on those cameras and you start exposing people, you are literally one of the biggest joys that I have on a weekly basis is talking to people like you. Like, the information is like a consistent education, a high level education. So my perspective is changing at such a rapid rate on a daily basis. So because I'm turning on these cameras now, when I get a chance to speak in front of people, I get to share your perspective. I get to share this person's perspective, and you know, just share a vast variety of, you know, success and tips and topics and things like that to help people move forward, man. So keep turning the camera on. Podcasting is a huge one. Building out those platforms to where you can monetize it. There's some platforms that I've been looking at as well. And you got to start thinking about like, we put out thousands of dollars on a monthly basis to produce this stuff, right? We got to get it edited. We got to get the equipment, the mics, all this good stuff. And sometimes it can be years before we can see a return on it. So not only podcasting, but figuring out affiliate links. How do you put, you know, certain links into these bios and you know, descriptions, so that when the transaction is made because of you referred it, you get a piece of it. Like, I believe that name of the company is the equity tap, right? I believe that you got to find your equity in everything that you do. And if you're doing something and you're not monetizing it, now you got to stop and you got to ask yourself, somebody's monetizing it. Why aren't you getting paid for it? So turn these cameras on, start podcasting, but figuring out how can you position yourself to, because money is flowing, right? It's like a highway. You stick your hand in that highway. You ain't got to get it all, but how do you put your hands in the middle of all of this traffic of money that's flowing through what you're doing? So, yeah. Now, you got it. Look, I got to ask you some questions.
No, I appreciate that. No, that's good. And, you know, sometimes you just need to hear it, bounce it off, you know. It's good to hear other people's perspective for sure. So, no, I appreciate that. So, before we get out of here, I just want to... I want to ask you, you know, when I'm traveling, I'm usually listening to, I have different playlists, different moves. I got my Afro beats. I got into Afro beats moving to DC, but get into my Afro beats. I'm always have my Southern rap, my Memphis rap. I'm always had it. I may have some R&B, may have some gospel. It's a blend. But then also I like podcasts and everything. So I want to know from you, what's on your travel playlist?
Man, so I am, if you talk to my wife, I'm the king of playlists. And it goes back to the creative side of me, right? I can appreciate music. I can appreciate art. I can appreciate curation. And so as you're moving through life, what mood do you want to curate right now? So I got playlists for everything, right? I got a playlist when I'm riding to the studio, get, you know, what mindset I want to get in. So it really just depends on what it is that I'm experiencing at that moment, what I'm listening to. But I got, Jade, I probably got at least 50 playlists. And I'm building playlists every day. So, and I listen to all of them on a consistent basis, and I listen to them in different places. Like I've gotten real big on sleep sounds now when I'm sleeping. So I have a sleep sound, right? Jazz has always been a foundation of, you know, helping me tap into my thought process. So I got, you know, 4 or 5 jazz playlists. I just got on this LA jazz playlist that's real dope, that I listen to on a daily basis. You know, it got like a West Coast vibe, but it's jazz and it helps me think. So I curate different experiences. So I got playlists that's curated based on the different experiences that, you know, I want to tap in. And I tell you this too, it's kind of a weird thing, but I think about life that way. You know, how do you curate an experience in everything that you do? My wife will tell you, like in the morning, I even play with the lights in the house because I try to create a mood, right? I want, I don't want you to wake up to harsh light. So, you know, I play around with the lights in the house and how do you come home and the lights are set? Like all of those things, in my opinion, creates the atmosphere. Your people always say that you're a product of your environment. Environment is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. So whatever environment you want to keep yourself in, man, you can curate it. You don't have to, you know, be subjected to the environment that's forced on you. I used to tell my wife all the time, I took the long way to my shop when I used to go to Orange Mound, right? Because it's a certain part of the community I just didn't want to drive through because mentally it was going to drain me, right? Mm. Even today, I even do the loop around downtown because I like to see motion. I like to see people moving. I like to see the big buildings. You know what I'm saying? I like to do these things because it curates energy for me. So yeah. Your environment is huge. So to go back to your question, the playlist, I have a lot of them because that's always how I think, right?
No, you answered it. Don't feel like you did. You definitely answered it. It's solid. Because I'm going to be asking you after this, send me a couple of links. I need that West Coast jazz. I definitely want that one. No, I love it. I listen to sound, sleep sounds. I'm like big on that now too. Like everything you're saying is pretty spot on for me. So that's good. That's good alignment. I'm gonna have to try the adjustments of the lights though. That's a good one. Yeah, that's real good.
Yeah, you'll be surprised. You'd be surprised.
I love that. So as we get out of here, I would love for you just leave us with a nugget and then tell us where we can find you so we can stay tapped in to the Equity Tap.
Yeah. I appreciate it. So first of all, thank you for allowing me on your platform. I've been following some of the things that you've been doing. I've actually been implementing a lot of it into the stuff that I've been doing with the Equity Tap. So you kind of my running partner here. So I need you to keep, you know, doing what you're doing so I can keep watching you and keep expanding my, you know, what's possible for me. But you can follow me on, you know, Instagram. Matter of fact, I'll give you my link tree that you can probably put in the description. It'll probably be the best way. So I don't have to go on all these different platforms, but Instagram is probably the easiest one and YouTube. So Instagram is KWoods_EquityTap. And then the YouTube channel is the Equity Tap Network. So find us on YouTube, subscribe. We're playing around with how much content that we release. As of recording this, I probably have about 14 interviews that I've done that's just ready to be released. So we've been toying with this concept of, do we become a daily entrepreneur show where we bring you entrepreneurs on the daily? Do we do it 3 times a week? So subscribe because we're going to be bringing out a ton of content. So I'll get you the link tree that you can put in the description as well. Closing advice, man, exposure. I talked about this on one of the episodes that we did, but once you get exposed, you realize the potential, right? And you can't necessarily go back to what the reality was before you was exposed to it. We're in first class right now, right? I remember the first time I flew first class, I couldn't go back and fly in the back of the plane anymore because the experience was completely different. So with entrepreneurship, the biggest hack is exposure. Go to these open houses. Yeah, you may can't afford it right now, but you gotta know what's possible, right? Go test drive the nice cars if you want to have that eventually, but you got to start exposing your mind, exposing yourself to that. Go get massages, feel how it feels, right, to have some of the luxuries in life. I'm not saying go crazy, but start exposing yourself to some of these things. And the biggest exposure is getting in the room, right? 90% of the battle is showing up. Show up to these networking events. Put yourself in a position so that you can meet people, right? I wasn't a salesman. I actually got an ebook that I wrote in August that I'm probably going to put out eventually. I hadn't put it out yet, but it's all about networking and how through networking, I got exposed to so many people that allowed me to, you know, get in certain rooms and put me in positions and stuff like that. So my closing advice is, man, just get exposure at all costs because you don't know what you don't know, right? Yeah. And until you know it, you got to put yourself in a position to know. There's things right now that me and you can do that will make our journey that much quicker. But how do we get there, right? You got to get it. You got to pick up a book. You got to read. You got to get in these rooms and you got to get exposure. So get exposure.
Man, gems dropping left and right. My God. Thank you. Listen, Kelvin, this has been great. This has been amazing. I knew it was going to be good, though. Not surprised, but I'm excited for all the things that people are going to be able to take away from our conversation and learn. And listen, y'all, if you are a new or aspiring business owner, you're a thriving business owner, you're looking to pivot, you want to do something different, you're somebody working at a job and you're like, I want something that's mine. I want my own. I want to start my entrepreneurial journey. You want to make sure that you are stay tuned to this podcast and definitely the Equity Tap, where there's going to be gems that are just going to be pouring throughout for you. So until next time, y'all, I can't wait to see what's going to come, but this has been amazing conversation, Kelvin. And I thank you again.
Yeah. And make sure they tap into your interview on our platform. So it's really going to open their eyes up to your background as well. So they get to kind of see how the sausage is made, as far as, you know, your experiences and stuff like this. So y'all make sure y'all find the episode that we did on the Equity Tab Network, tap into that as well.
And I'll make sure that I have that in the description as well when it's live. And yeah, so this is what I mean, y'all. In the book, we talk about matching your grind. So thank you, Kelvin, for matching my grind, man. Until next time. Later.
I appreciate it. Thank you.